Are you feeling overwhelmed by hormonal changes? If you're a woman, you're not alone. With over 1,000 hormone disruptors in our environment, it's no wonder things can feel out of balance. On top of that, natural changes like PMS, menopause, and other life stages can leave you feeling tired, irritable, and trapped in a constant battle with your body. But here's the good news. You don't have to suffer through it. Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth is here to help. This herbal formula fine-tunes your hormones, balancing estrogen, testosterone, and even stress hormones like cortisol, which can contribute to weight gain, racing thoughts, poor sleep, and more. With over 40,000 five-star reviews and a bottle selling every 24 seconds, the results speak for themselves. Ready to feel like yourself again? For a limited time, get 15% off your first order at happymammoth.com using code NEXTCHAPTER at checkout. Visit happymammoth.com today and get your old self back naturally.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to leave up holiday decorations year-round. Others have the need to use their garage as practice space for their new metal band. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
This show is brought to you by The Makery, the podcast network for makers.
Are you ready?
Ready.
Welcome to Knife Talk, guys. This is a podcast for knife makers, knife enthusiasts, DIYers, and everybody else. I'm Jeff Fader, and I'm here with the great Mareko Momasi of Momasi Fire Arts. Craig can't be with us, but we're going to get him next week. Mareko, how are you?
I'm doing all right. I don't know. The weather's been fucking beautiful here lately. I saw this meme the other day about Washington, how it has set 7 or 8 different seasons, because there's like the fall spring and then it goes back to fall, and then there's the real spring and all this other shit. And so we're in our false spring right now. We got like mid-50s. We had a 60-degree day the other day. It's beautiful, sunny, but it's like, it is kind of disheartening in a way, because it's like, oh, this is great. And then you get shit on all over again for the actual spring. So, but I'm just trying to take it one day at a time and enjoy it while I got it. I got a nice walk-in the other day. We have all these great walking trails, so I did like a 3-mile walk.
Trying to
be more active. I've been at the gym.
Whoa.
I joined the local YMCA, so I'm doing some super basic shit, because I've tried to get back into it like over the years and go too hard too fast, and my body's too fucked up, and I'm like, I can't go to the gym today. And then I just, I really struggle with like self-motivation and stuff like that. So that goes to the wayside pretty quick. But going like easing into it's been good. So I just jump on the cycle. I go for like a 20-30 minute ride to warm up, and then I go down to the weight room and use machines to just kind of ease back into weight training and just strength training. I'm not even trying to do like any, I don't need the bulk up, but strong muscles are always a good thing. And so I'm just trying to train for strength rather than bulk, and not go too hard too fast. And it's been good. I'm only doing like a couple days a week. Usually it's like, Tuesday and Friday. And it's been good.
I just got accepted in the New York City Marathon.
Oh, shit. Oh, I just saw your post. Picture of you looking like you're feeling
Madsen.
Really great.
So I ran the New York City Marathon 12 years ago. And then with the Michael J. Fox Foundation,
right.
It's for Parkinson's.
Yeah.
And my friend who got me in was high school friend. She's fantastic. And we even talked about this on the podcast like a year ago. She had passed away in a very tragic way.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about it, and I thought about trying to do it when I turned 50. And I just everything fell apart. And
sure.
And then I sent a message to the Michael J. Fox Foundation just to kind of reconnect to see if the same people were there.
Yeah.
And they didn't know. They obviously, so many people had changed places.
Right.
And then they sent me the application. I was like, fuck it. This is back in December, and I applied for it. So I was like, with everything going on in the world and everything going on in the world and everything going on with Steve, we're going to talk about in a little bit.
Yeah.
I was like, I was just like, if I don't have to do this, it's not going to be in the world. And then all of a sudden, boop, congratulations. You were on the Team Fox team for the 2025 TCS New York City Marathon. Yeah. Oh, remember that time you said you're going to raise $5,000? Okay, great. We're all fucking fired up about it. If you don't give us the, you know, there are these check marks in order to, you know, raise the money. So
I see. So you passed the influencer check, basically.
Well, as of the first day, I'm a fifth of the way there. So I should be all right. I'm not too worried about it. But at the same time, it's like it becomes the training in and of itself is daunting. But I'm at a better baseline than I was when I did it the first time. So like that picture of me from 2013, I was – Cliff Dufton sent me a message. He says, "You look like you have to poop." And I was just like, dude, at that moment, I wanted an ambulance. I was fucking miserable. I was like,
you look miserable.
I was fucking miserable. It is no joke. The training for it, I'm gonna have to train differently. And
okay,
I'm excited because I'm gonna get an earlier start on training, but I also have a way better baseline. I'm still 6 days a week on the Peloton, and for the past 5 years, and I feel like I'm in a better starting spot, and it's all mental too. So. Mm-hmm. So I'm gonna hit everybody up. So if you're listening to this, go to Jeff Fader or Full Blast or Fader Knives, and then there's a link to help your boy out.
Help your boy out.
You know, yeah. So the running starts this weekend. I'm gonna start running this weekend. And
okay.
Get your squared away. I'm gonna get on a. I followed a plan a number. 12 years ago, and I'm gonna look for a kind of updated plan, and I got to go see my doctor because my knees are slightly fucked up, and it'll be a wreck. I'll be bitching about it until October. There's no question about it.
Right.
And so that's that.
Okay. So you said you're on the Peloton 6 days a week. How long are your rides?
At least 30 minutes.
At least 30. Okay.
And then it's really first thing in the morning. And then I've been starting to do more yoga. They have yoga classes too.
Sure.
So I've been doing yoga classes too to kind of stretch out. Like you said, you don't want to get bigger. My Hillary's just like, you should do some weight training. And I'm like, I don't want to get fucking bigger, dude. I'm like, I'm 6'1".
Yoked.
And I'm already, I'm not yoked. I'm big enough. You know, I don't need to get bigger. I got enough mass on me. I need to be running comfortably, and all the fucking. I'm a little on the too big side to be comfortable at 26 miles, 13 miles. No, we're gonna talk about fucking running the whole goddamn time. 6 minutes in, we're just all
do it. We'll get it over with. And we'll move on.
No, it's like, you know, I'm excited and nervous, and it's like Hillary thinks that I'm having a slight midlife crisis, and I said, look, it could have been worse. It could have been like coke and hookers, you know. Could have been big cars. It could have been expensive cars. If it's like, you know, running a marathon to raise money for people with Parkinson's, I mean, if that's a midlife crisis, I'll take it.
Yeah, it's pretty mild.
So.
So you're shooting for 102.
102 what?
Years. Midlife crisis.
Oh, there's no way. I'm over that. I mean, I'm past the midlife, baby. I ain't making it to 100, that's for sure. I don't want to make it to 100, frankly. Whatever.
Fine. All right. Yeah.
So we didn't have an episode last week, and, you and I had a great two episodes ago where we were talking about our friend Steve Pellegrino. And before we did the podcast, you and I talked about the fact is we really wanted to kind of make it seem as though, not seem as though, but make it uplifting. And we support the fact that Steve Pellegrino, our friend Pellegrino Cutlery, was in life support. And then we wanted to send the positive energy out.
Yeah, going into it optimistically.
Optimistically. And I think we did, to the point where we broke his balls a little bit too. which I liked. I always appreciated. You know, I was like, he's coming out of this, and we're gonna fucking kick his ass when he gets out and stuff.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, that's not the case. He passed away on on the 27th. It was, you know, as you know, you and I were talking about before. It was terrible, and it's upsetting, and he was our friend, and we've had like 2 weeks to kind of process it a little bit, which is obviously not enough.
Sure.
One of the things they had, and yeah, you know, I want to just tell you the story about the flag raising and the people we saw down there. And
yeah,
but you know, anytime I ask you questions or you break in, whatever. But he passed away from the complications of the car accident, and he was on life support. And his family had a flag raising, and this is what was pretty amazing to me. I was talking to my wife. I was like, "Have you ever heard of a flag raising in the hospital?" And she goes, "Well, apparently they don't. For some reason, organ donation is not as common as you'd think. So these hospitals are doing are they're really trying to make not a production, but they're trying to really honor people for being an organ donor because it's just, you know, for whatever reason, it's kind of hard, you know, it's important."
Sure.
So they organized this this flag raising, and I thought, well, you know, maybe I should go. And I thought about it, and we talked about the fact that every time Steve was always there, you know, whether it be at the event that you and I first met him at. Remember, we weren't on Knife Talk at the time, and I don't know how he figured it out, but he was at JB Prince.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and then when we were at Maker Camp, he was there.
Always.
When I taught my class, he surprised me by being there. And in my mind, I thought, what would Steve do in this situation? I was like, well, he'd be there. So I had made the decision that I was going to go down to the hospital. I didn't know where it was. I didn't ask anybody. That I wouldn't, you know, Steve wouldn't have done that. He would have just found out. So I found the hospital and I was like, all right, listen, if this turns out to be the wrong hospital, then that's just the way it is. And I'm doing what Steve would have done.
Right.
So got down there, and it was the family. His wife was there, and his mother and his aunt and some other people. His wife's family was there to support her. Mm-hmm. And our guy, Jesse Killian, was there.
Oh, nice.
And Chris Novak was there at CN Knives, a good dude. And then Keith Drennan from the Maker Camp, he was there. It was a very small group, and I was really honored to be there and be able to kind of, we, you know, made jokes, which was fun. Jesse is hilarious. He was like, he was trying to make up for John Ariani not being there. And, you know, we just were able to honor it. He was so funny. He was just so funny.
It.
And,
yeah.
That's what we did. And I was very honored to be able to give my condolences to Steve's mom and to his wife and to his brother. And I drove home and, you know, I just thought about him. I thought about him a lot. So, you know.
Yeah. Sad. Those things they're hard to do, but I'll tell you, as I've gotten older and I've lost a few people over the years, it's, I've allowed my fear of my discomfort get in the way, and I've always regretted not taking those opportunities because then it kind of just weighs on me. And I try not to be too hard on myself, but I'm just like, I try to take it and learn from it and move forward in a way that is more in line with what I would really want, which is to go do the thing, even though it's sad and it hurts and all that shit. And so I've been trying to do better about doing that. And I have over, especially the last couple of years. And so, I think while those things are hard to do, it's important to do them because it is part of, like, you know, processing grief and difficulty. And also it's really great to, I think, to connect like you did with like Jesse and those other guys that showed up and just help each other know that you're not alone in that pain and that loss.
Yeah, no, listen, you know, I'm glad I was there. I'm glad I got to see those guys. I'm really glad I got to talk to his mother and his wife and his brother. And I felt very, like, you know, honoring him and stuff like that. That was really amazing. But just to talk about Steve a little bit, and if you want to listen to, I did a bigger episode about remembering Steve on the Full Blast podcast. We don't have to, but I do want to say that if you looked at his work, what was amazing to me is how his work, the Steve that I knew was very specific in regards to what he wanted. He was a very talented knife maker. You could see how devoted he was to knife making. He was very, as a bladesmith, I got to see, he came to my shop years ago and he brought some of his early knives. This is like, you know, right after we had met him. And he, you know, the fact that he was able to see his progression become as incredible as it was, as a very talented knife maker, and you could look at some of his influences. I know that Don Nguyen was a big influence on him in regards to design, and Greg Sims. And you really got to see a very, very, his knives, I felt like, embodied the person that he was in terms of design, in terms of precision in terms of how he wanted to be perceived and how he, I felt like if you, you know, we talk about knife, I talk about the fact that I don't think knife makers are artists, but the funny, and I make it as a, it's a joke to me. It's a joke to me. But what I look for, when I look at artists and I look at their work in general, is I want to see how this object is a manifestation of the personality of the person that they are. And when you look at Steve and you talk to Steve, and you see his work, you see this direct connection, and it really, I felt like it was a real manifestation of the person that he was.
Mm. Yeah. I always really, really appreciated his eye for design. And actually, I went back and re-listened to your interview when you had him on, the Full Blast podcast. And I had listened to it before, but I had forgotten about all the different stuff about, like, trying to... get into engineering and his rocketry, his love of rocketry and stuff like that, and him being very a science-minded guy while also being a very creative guy at the same time was always really interesting kind of combination to find in people. And so I agree with everything you said about him and his work, and I just, he was always I feel like he was just always really kind and very very gracious and I guess
generous.
Generous. Like, fuck. Like the first, so we met him at the JB Prince, and then the second time I spent time with him was at your shop at a tiny get together you had long time ago, and that's where I first met John Ariani and Cliff and those guys as well. But you know, Steve's there with like high end bottles or whatever, and these beautiful steaks. He knows how to wine and dine the guys. Bourbon and steaks.
But, that was high level steaks.
High level. Yeah,
and
so good.
That was
still
I have
some of the best bites of steak I've ever had in my life.
What I'll do is I actually have pictures of Shipwright Skills. Keith Mitchell sent me pictures from that.
Oh, nice.
And I was cooking paella and Steve was cooking the steaks and we're sticking them. And that was so much fun, by the way.
Yeah.
But yeah, he just showed up with like, you know, and Racer Rack showed up with food and everyone was showed up with food. But, you know, Steve was really just a generous guy and he just wanted to be there. And it was like, but I agree with everything you said. It's a tough spot, but at the same time, we were fortunate to know him. We were lucky to know him, and you know, it's. I actually, frankly, you know, you said you listened to the podcast, and I'm grateful. I have it linked in Full Blast podcast. It's called The Trajectory of Steve Pellegrino. I can't listen to it yet.
Sure.
Like I couldn't listen to that, and I couldn't listen. I know when Steve had died. I sent a message to Craig and said, "Why don't you put up the episode that you interviewed him with?" And I couldn't listen to that either. So, like, I'm not there yet. I'm still, like, in this state of shock.
Yeah.
State of shock. And actually, you know, want to talk, we're talking to Knife Talk is, you know, one of the things we talk about all the time. We can kind of get into something else. You know, we talk about the fact that people sent messages saying, hey, you know, I was wondering if you could make something in the, you know, like this guy, copy somebody's. I had one of Steve's dudes or Steve's customers, I'm not 100% sure, send me a message. He says, you know, I was going to work with Steve. We were going to do something. And I was wondering if you could copy this and we'll call it the, and then, you know, I'm going to leave it there.
Yeah.
And I was just like, fucking guy hasn't been dead for 24 hours and you're hawking me in Shinik to make his knife. I'm like, forget it. And I thought to myself, I was just like, well, the other thing is I've always felt slightly guilty because the PR company that we use is down in Philly. So they are using all their Philly people. And I said to our PR rep, I said, dude, you better get me out of Philly because Steve Pellegrino is going to kill me. So I always felt a little bit of guilt about that. And then, Steve has been amazing in regards to that. This guy was like, hey, you think you could, you know, this, we were on to something, maybe you could make, I'm like, I said it as respectfully as possible. And I was just like, yeah, in the knife making game, we don't do that. But I mean, Jesus Christ, the guy's just dead. You know, I'm not going to make his knives for you, for Christ's sakes.
Yeah.
Look, rest in peace, Steve Pellegrino. We're going to leave the GoFundMe for his wife in the bio of where you're listening. If you're listening to this, if you go to Full Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram, you can, in the bio, there are links, and one of the links is to the GoFundMe that's going to, you know, help his wife and his family cope with all this. And, you know, everybody in the knife making community has been amazing. And the fact that they're so...
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
They share it a lot, I think, is really great. And, you know, we send nothing but peace and love and our, you know, blessings and, you know, hope for, you know, hope for better days to his friends and family.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, that eulogy was sponsored by EvenEat. Sorry, Steve, but we'll fuck around a little bit. We're going to break some balls.
You'd be laughing.
Yeah, of course. This episode. Hey, listen, guys. Steve Pellegrino. You know what Steve Pellegrino? Steve Pellegrino didn't use an EvenEat, but we're going to use an EvenEat. This podcast is sponsored by EvenEat. This eulogy is sponsored by EvenEat, manufacturer of the finest heat treat ovens available. To find your next oven, go to evenheat-kiln.com. And then that's that. So we got questions. We have some feedback. I think I might be in some trouble from 2 weeks ago, but we're going to radio tease that. Okay. I might be in a little bit of trouble, which is fine by me. I can squirm my way out of everything.
Yeah. Okay.
But what do you want to do first? Let me squirm later.
Let's start with the questions.
So if you want to participate with this podcast, this show, go to Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram, and that's where you can send us your questions. You can send us your DMs. You can fool around, whatever, flister feedback. So hey, why don't you hit it?
Yep. This first one is from Anonymous. Lost my passion for knife making once I started to work in a commercial forge shop. Any advice on getting it back? Ooh. Yeah. So sounds like somebody's not psyched right now. And I'll tell you, I personally, and I'm sure you experience this from time to time, maybe not, but I definitely experience burnout. And I feel like especially more frequently in the last few years. And I found that one of the things I think that really contribute to it is just the monotony of it. For the way my brain works, the day in, day out, doing the same shit over and over and over again. And so I realized that my brain thrives on variability, and so I need to mix it up. And I'm still making knives, and I'm still making steel, but I'm finding ways to do little things that are just a little different from what I normally do. Perfect example are the last few handles I've done. After I do my Japanese cowboy handle sculpting, then I get in there with sanding sticks and stuff, and I start blending things around and creating these different, like, these little kind of carving or stepped effects on the handles. And it's a small progression, a small evolution on the work, but it's me exploring the shape of the handle while still making it functional, but also kind of changing the overall aesthetic and the process and creating it. But it's figuring out ways. For me, it's been finding ways to mix it up and do something different to break up that monotony, but still get shit done. Right. And I think at least for the way my brain works, that's what I got to do. And I think it was like probably 4 or 5 years ago, I've started trying to build in time for myself, because I always say, you know, I have this idea for this, I have this idea for that, I'll do that once this is done, and then I don't take the time to do it, and then I'll be like, oh, okay, I'll get to it when this is done, and I never get to it, and I'm never taking that time for my own kind of experimentation and exploration and processes, or steel pattern making or blade forging processes and all, like handle sculpting, handle assembly, all this kind of stuff. I'm not taking that time. And so I've had to build it in so that I do have that time, or that I'm kind of scheduling and forcing myself to take that time to help break up kind of the monotony, and as well as like as a small reward for myself. You know, it could be a half day, it could be a whole day, whatever. But every like once a week or once a month or whatever, to just to mix it up, break it up, and give yourself a little bit of a reward, but also give yourself space to have some of that that kind of creative exploration aspect in the work. But that's what's been working for me. It's still tricky, and I still feel the burnout. But that's when I'm just I realize I'm kind of like falling back in my old patterns. So I still need to like figure out different ways to mix it up but still get things done. And honestly, what I find is I'll step away kind of from my normal way of doing things, and I'll do some exploring, and I'll do that for a little while, and then I'll be like, I don't want to do this anymore. And then I'll just actually just revert back to my normal stuff, and I'll just go back to my regular. But then at a certain point, I'm like, oh, this is getting boring again. And then I start mixing it up. It's not constantly always mixing it up. Just when I feel like I need it, I do that.
Right. I would be interested. I mean, when you worked for Bob Cramer, did you think that, were you ever like, I don't want to do, now that I'm doing this for my, whatever, my job, I don't want to do it outside of the job? Or I think that was what, I made this guy anonymous because I felt like, he don't need piles of people coming into his DMs and kind of giving him advice. So I just made him, but I would think that when you were working for Bob, you would probably have felt this kind of similarity, like, I make knives 5 days a week, I don't want to do that anymore.
Not well, and I think it was different when I worked for Bob because it was new, and so right. And I worked for him for 3 years, and so every day there was still kind of learning a certain level of kind of, I don't know if mastery is the right word, but just like
proficiency.
Yeah, proficiency, competency in various processes, and continuing to push that efficiency, whether it's blade grinding, handle sculpting, handle assembly, even just the time that it takes to do all these various things. Because I did work, when I worked for Bob, kind of in a somewhat of a production environment. And so it was still kind of fresh. But now that I've been doing knife making for going on 15 years, I think now, it's that I've started to hit that kind of point of, or those that feeling of burnout. But we kept it novel because he once we got through the orders, we weren't really, we could do kind of whatever. So then I was making, at that point, I was making steel, I was doing all the handle sculpting, handle assembly and stuff like that, so I could like get crazy on what kind of handle material I was putting on there, kind of still playing with handle sculpting and becoming more efficient at that. Damascus pattern wise, we had some fixed patterns that we kind of just did, but then we also did a little bit of exploration stuff. And that's when we started doing the auctions, and then the auctions were novel and exciting too. So there was always kind of like this sense of novelty. And honestly, when I started on my own, I feel like I was actually working way harder than I am now, because I was like, I gotta get this off the ground, I gotta get it going,
right?
And I was hungry, and I guess maybe I became complacent maybe over the years. But when I first started, yeah, I still had that like trying to, and I was adding forging blades, because when I worked for Bob, we didn't do any blade forging. We forged steel, but then everything was stock removed. And so now I was adding blade forging, and that added a whole new set of skills that, one, I had to learn how to do and do well, but then pushing to get more proficient, and then changing starting to do the S grind and starting to do the Japanese cowboy. Like, these are all been ways of me to kind of like mix things up, but still make something that's interesting, you know, making these different mosaic Damascus patterns. I'm using that as a way, I'm still getting shit done, but I'm using it as a way to mix up the processes and do something different and create novelty in the work while still getting work done and paying the bills.
I think it's really important to kind of to say that is to figure out ways for this guy. A lot of it is you're gonna figure out why you loved it in the first place. Mm-hmm. I mean, that would be the first thing. Like, I Look, I worked in metal shops, and I've worked in metal shops for 10 years, 15 years. I was in metal shops.
Yeah.
And I'd come home and I hated the way I smelled. I smelled like metal dust. I didn't want to touch steel. And sure. It was like, I understood the idea of like, all right, I've had my fucking fill, you know? But at the same time, I don't know, I heard somebody say, I think it was like a jujitsu guy. He says, you have to learn how to be comfortable being uncomfortable.
Oh yeah.
And I remember the hardest, one of the hardest sculptures I had to do was I did this, I was at this postgraduate critique, and this friend of mine who's a bronze caster, you know, very blithely said to me, he's like, I only have to make one sculpture. I can just recast it over 100 times. And I thought it was so obnoxious. I'm just like, oh, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to make 60 identical sculptures. I'm going to carve them all the same. I'm going to paint them all the same. And I'm going to show you. And I did it. And it was fucking drove me to madness. You know, when you're making sculpture 12, because yeah. You have to do every step, you know, right. Every step, you know, 60 times.
Right.
And it was like the hardest part, the craziest part was the painting, because every stroke, it wasn't just painting one and then going to the next one. Every stroke you had to do 60 times, and then the sculptures were two-sided, so you'd do 120 times. Oh. So one stroke, you'd have to do it 120 times going down. I had to make an easel that all the sculptures were. I'd be walking down the line, I'll never forget doing the eyeballs. And I was doing the eyeballs, and the eyeball, just one part of the eyeball took me like 3 hours. Mm-hmm. And I thought I was going crazy because
sure.
I made it to the point where I want to make sure that all the paint marks were exactly the same on every single one.
Right.
I went into fucking madness, and I thought to myself, I'm like, there's nothing harder than this. I cannot fucking possibly do anything harder than paint fucking 60 little sculptures exactly the same. It was like, and actually, frankly, when it was all done, I was really proud of myself because I was just like, I didn't think I was going to make it through that shit. Yeah. And then no shortcuts. It was just crazy. It's still today probably one of my favorite sculptures I ever did. But when I started making knives, it made me comfortable with doing the same goddamn thing over and over again.
Sure.
Also, the fact that I went to when I was at Center for Metal Arts, and we were doing mostly a lot more railings than teaching. You're doing the same thing over and over again. I was once on a power hammer for a week and a half forging one element in pin, on pickets. It's just all this just like leaf. I had two power hammers running, one with a combination die and one with a crown die or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
Call it a crown die. And we'd have to, it was one heat, we'd have to make this one leaf, and I had to do it thousands of times. I was on the fucking power hammers for a week and a half doing the same goddamn thing, and I learned to love it.
Wow.
So my opinion was, and then before David was here, I remember hand sanding 50 knives for Carl Ruiz, all 440C, which was a disaster area. Yeah. And I remember just like thinking about the big picture and just trying to like be so proud of when it was all done. And I did, and I like that. Now, especially with David here, I really try to make sure that it isn't totally monotonous. Like, I don't make him – he's not doing hand sanding, you know, for days on end. I mean, maybe we'll do half a day on this, and then I'll figure out ways in which to change it up for him too, but at the same time for there to be this like – I mean, I like the hand sanding. I could do three full days of hand sanding without any problems.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I mean, it is monotonous. You're 100% right. You have to kind of like think big. I mean, I'm not talking to you. I'm talking to one.
Yeah, yeah.
You got to think about the big picture. But in regards to Anonymous, you got to find what you love about making knives, and then you have to grab onto that love. And then that is what's going to get you locked in. Don't try to emulate the job that you're in, you know, like that's what a lot of people do is, you know, you'll talk to coworkers. And when I was in metal shops, all these coworkers are like, I can run this shop 10 times better than the boss. And I know he's doing it all wrong. And then they leave and they try to start up a job, but they have no idea what they're fucking doing.
Right.
So don't try to emulate what your job is doing. Try to seize upon what you love about knife making, and then you'll find something that you enjoy. The best part about knife making is you're not lifting anything over 25 pounds. you know, they're not like, it's not like ditch digging. You can find something or a design or something that gets you fired up, and then you can make it to the point where you can finish it up. And, it, you know, I think that you need to just find what you love about it and then just dive into that part. Because obviously the guy doesn't need it. He doesn't need the money. He got a job sure. already.
Yeah.
I think find what you love and then don't make it about money. That's what I wish. That's what I think this goddamn podcast, we fucked a lot of people's heads up. Because we can't help, but the questions that we get are generally money related. Right. And we never just talk about the love of what we're doing.
True.
And it's because, like you said this a couple of weeks ago, that when you all right, learn how to make a knife and then what? I mean, how many knives do you personally need to make for yourself? You know, you end up making them for somebody.
Yeah.
And that's the problem is, like, we commoditize this fucking hobby. And the next thing you know,
which is why it's not art.
Might be. I don't know. It depends on who you talk to. It depends on who you talk to. But, I mean, it is a manifestation of your own thoughts and dreams and feelings. And, you know, so it is something. But you got to find what you love about it and then focus on that.
And then you go put it on the corner.
Yeah, put it on the corner. Put it on the corner. Come on. Make me some money, bitch. I mean, sorry. That and with that said, if you want to make some money, if you want to be monotonous, go get some Endasa USA Rhino Wet. Oh, that'll make things a lot easier for you. Rhino Wet is the best. Get yourself some 220, 400, 800, get whatever you want. And you know where you get it? Texas Farrier Supply. Go to TexasFarrierSupply.com. And if you put in the promo code KNIFETALK10, you're going to get 10% off everything at Texas Farrier Supply. I love Evan and those guys at Texas Farrier Supply, and they will take care of you. So definitely get yourself some Rhino Wet and go to Texas Farrier Supply. Get yourself a hammer or something.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Should we do another one?
Yeah.
All
right. A couple.
MRC Customs. I almost said Mr. C Customs.
We did that before. We said he should change it to Mr. Customs, and he says, no, it's MRC Customs. But I do like Mr. Customs.
All right, says, sup, boys. Dilemma here. I'm trying to decide between two upgrades for my shop. One option would be to upgrade my Grizzly Grinder to a Broadback or something similar, or stop messing around with, Cricut Vinyls and Electro Etch Probe made from a phone charger and get a laser. What do you guys think?
Ooh, so he's...
Oh, you want to jump? You want to jump to a laser? I wouldn't jump to a laser. I mean, unless you're using it for a bunch of other stuff. While lasers are super cool, the personalizer isn't that big of a jump. And you can still get a nice grinder on top of getting the personalizer electromarking system.
This is a great question.
Yeah.
Because the one thing that I haven't invested in and I wish I had, but I still feel good reason for not, is a laser. And the reason why is because I'm sending Patricia Bruno and IMG. I mean, I'm ordering stuff from her every week. And it's because we're getting more, I'm not kidding.
Collaborations and stuff.
Collaborations, or somebody wants some initials, and we upcharge. Obviously, we'll charge for the engraving, and then people fucking pay it. And it's like, you know, and I every time I get something new, and she's fantastic. IMG makes the best stencils, and she's super duper fast. We've talked about her before. IMG, yeah. I think she's in somewhere in Utica, New York, or something.
She's in
like
Utica,
that.
Yeah.
Patricia Bruno, she's amazing and fast, very reasonable, and. I think you said the one time you sent a fucking drawing on a napkin and she coughed it up, something like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
But in my mind, I always think to myself, we would have paid for the laser by now. Now, the problem with the laser, the reason why we haven't gotten one yet is because, number one, I just don't think I have it in me to learn how to use it, number one. And I know I'm going to get a million messages saying, well, it's not that hard. I'm just a, you know, genius. But the other thing is I don't have anywhere very, very clean to use it. And I know that there's certain types of lasers that you vent and some that you don't and some that are easy, you know. And be honest with you, I don't want to get one of these cheap Chinese lasers that everyone seems to be getting. I think I'm having a bit of a problem with them. So I've reached out, I've done the research, and I've just made a decision to just like, I want to give business to a local small business like IMG, and that's fine by me. If people pay it, I'll fucking, you know, I want to keep her in biz. So.
Yeah. I mean, I get that, but especially with the volume you do, and at least the time I know it takes me to etch or mark a blade, you know, you could have a setup of even like four blades all getting marked at the same time while you're doing other shit.
I know, but I don't have the room and the cleanliness for it.
Oh,
you
could build a booth.
I know all about it. Trust me, we've talked to my business. Tony and I have talked about it. And
you got a wall in that color lab.
I know. And we've already thought about it. I got bigger fish to fry than building shit right now. Okay. And at some point, we'll do something. Down the line, it'll be something we'll do.
Yeah.
But at the moment, it's like I feel as though it's on the low side of the importance right now.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
I don't etch as deep as you. I mean, when I etch it, takes three. I count to three, and it's done. So it's like I don't really do that crazy depth stuff.
I got you.
And I just the thought of like learning one more thing to me also is just like I'm not in it. I'm not locked in.
I got you,
Mareko. I'm not locked in.
All right. I feel like anybody who's doing higher volume, like when I'm thinking of volume. I'm thinking like 10 or more knives a month, maybe 20 or more knives a month. That I think a laser makes good sense, especially if you're going to be customizing blades or putting special marks or you're doing collaborations. But for somebody like me who's marking a blade like once or twice a month, fucking a laser is useless.
Yeah.
A massive investment for something I hardly ever use versus somebody like you would be using all the time.
I mean, yes. If I had another room, we would have done it by now. And I just like I want a very clean place, and I'm very like I've seen him. We've used him. I've gone to places. I've used him. I've seen him. I've gone to places. And part of me is just like, why haven't we done it already? And you know, for me right now, I'm dragging my feet. And part of it, like I said, part of it is like I do like working with another. I've been really very focused. Like, you know, with the way the economy is going, the way businesses are going, I'm really feeling very strongly about work, you know, trying to put my energy and money into working with other. I'm referring to them as ecosystems. Like, I feel like when you buy a knife from Fader Knives, you're part of an ecosystem. You're
right.
Not only are you helping to pay the salary or the, you know, the money for me and the people who work for me, but I'm buying materials from people that I know and that I use, and then I'm contributing to their ecosystem. Yep. So part of me is just like, when I take away that business, part of me is just like, I mean, I'm not losing money. It's not an efficiency thing. And I don't want to do people's initials. You know, that doesn't interest me at all. Like, I had just got recently one, the biggest one I've ever, the biggest stencil I've ever seen in my life. I mean, size was like, it was bigger. It was about the size of a soda can.
Okay.
And I put it on the thing, and I'm like, I don't know what's going to happen. I put the fucking, goddamn electro etch on. I jizzed it up with all the electro
thing. The electrolytes.
And smoke was coming up. It was such a huge amount of black. It was such a huge amount of black. I was just like, and noises were coming and smoke was coming up. And I was like, oh my God. And it was great, but it was like this monster of thing. And I was just like, all right, well, it looks good. He's happy. Guy's super happy. And I was just like, it was the biggest goddamn stencil I'd ever seen.
Jeez.
We did it. But at the same time, we throw these charges at these people and they pay it. And what am I going to do? Say no?
Right.
And I don't want to have to also like, oh, I don't want to be like you, you know, you send Patricia the drawing in the napkin and then she's got to figure it out. I don't want to do any like goddamn Photoshop work, you know, and then what happens if I didn't do it right and it looks stupid? You know, I don't want to do that either. I got reasons.
Okay.
They're not great reasons. Let's face it. Let's just face that they're not great reasons, but they're reasons that are letting me sleep at night.
I got you.
Okay. But do you know what reason I would suggest highly that would be good for you?
Okay, let's hear it.
And good for this guy is going and getting yourself a Broadbeck. Broadbeck Ironworks. And we got special news.
Oh, boy.
We got special news from my guys at Broadbeck Ironworks. Broadbeck Ironworks, guys, is the best place to get a knife our machine, a 2x72 grinder. I was just digging up an email from our guy Ben.
Our Ben.
Get yourself a 2x72 grinder. Go to BroadbackIronworks.com, and they have something special. They're running a sale for Texas, Blade Show Texas, from March 7th through March 21st, and it will provide 12% off of 2x72 grinders, attachment, and parts. Other discounts will not apply during the sale, but will resume on the 22nd. So before the 7th, you can use Knife Talk 10 to get you 10% off. And then after the 22nd, you can use Knife Talk 10 to get you 10% off. But if you get something from Broadbeck Ironworks between the 7th, March 7th, and March 21st, they're giving you 12% off.
The sale is live now. Because today's the 6th as we're recording. They're not going to hear this before the 7th.
Oh, yeah, good. So don't worry about the past.
Sales live now, but it's only until the 21st, so make it happen.
Yeah, 12% off. BroadbackIronworks.com. There we go. We made it happen.
Yeah.
I got you, Ben. Ben Sechrist is the man. Those guys are awesome, and let's keep going. All right, so we have the next one is – oh, yeah, so MRC Customs, take that grizzly, throw it in the woods – and get yourself a Broadbeck.
No, you use the grizzly for just ripping off like bullshit work, ripping off forged scale and crap you don't want your nice grinder to be doing.
All right, there you go. Connor McCrillis, there's a name we haven't heard in a while. Wow, it's been a while since I've messaged. I got out of knife making, spent 2 years as a sail maker.
Oh, wow.
And now I'm starting a business making bags. As a non-knife maker who has serrated knives in my kitchen, how can I sharpen them? Signed, Mike Coxmall. Get it? Mike Coxmall.
So, Mike Ox.
Oxmall.
Oxmall.
Mike Oxmall. So how would you clean?
I've never heard that one. That's what I'm doing.
Oh, dude, I've been hearing them. They've been coming in fast and furious. Not into knife talk. Okay. Not into knife talk.
All right.
But I've been hearing them through other things. I love these fucked up names. So keep them coming. Keep them coming.
Okay, Mike.
Like Jacques Too Tight and all that stuff.
Jacques Too Tight.
Yeah.
That's fucking funny.
So how would you sharpen a serrated knife in your kitchen? I don't know if Connor has any equipment and stuff like that.
Right. It's tricky. There are round stones. There's even actually honing rods that could probably be used to help hone the edges. Serrations actually, because they're not physically cutting touching the cutting surface, because the teeth of the serrations are keeping the actual cutting portion of the serration off. They just need to be honed, really. And so if you can get some sort of round serrate, honestly, I bet a fucking dowel with sandpaper would tune that fucker up in a second. Yeah, just get a wood dowel. If you really need something hardy, go get, what is it? They sell those G10 dowels. Does Lawrence sell those G10 dowels for like handle pins and stuff like that?
I would think if not, he would get them for you.
Yeah, but something, sandpaper behind it, and just don't scrub back and forth, just take your time, stroke one direction. Like if you've ever used a chainsaw file, it really just cuts in one direction. So cut in one direction, lift it up, but have it secured some way, even just like a couple spring clamps on the edge of a table to help hold it into place. You'll get that edge tuned right back up really fucking quick. But I wouldn't go any coarser than like 800.
Yeah, you don't need to go crazy.
600, 800.
You're absolutely right.
You're not
right.
Really going to need that much. But
it's,
man,
the apex of those tips of the teeth. Yeah. That's the problem.
Well, we don't even care about those. Those can be fucking dull as shit.
Well, that's why they think they're dull.
Right. Yeah, the serrations are the part the inside of the serration is what's actually doing the work. And those do need to be tuned up every once in a while. I think just getting in there with a dowel and some sandpaper will do you a lot of help.
Well, Connor, you can also buy your serrated knives from people who offer sharpening for them like I do. Unlike most of those flea bags making their jigsaw I've seen all your jigsaw serrations, all you guys out in the world listening to this podcast thinking, I wonder if he's talking about me. Mm-hmm. I've seen him. I'm offering, if you buy one of my serrated knives, I'll sharpen it for you because I already got the fucking stuff to do it.
It's all set up.
But I would think also maybe, see if I'm wrong, you know, serrated knives aren't serrated on both sides. There's one side. There's the serrated side and the flat side.
Yep.
What if you just ran the flat side over a stone just to kind of give it a little bit of a, just a little bit, almost like you would like a chisel or something? Would you, do you think that that would probably sharpen up just a hair?
No. Okay. That'll do more work at the edge where the teeth are touching the whatever. It's going to do more there. Rather than inside the serration, so I think it wouldn't be necessarily a bad idea though to, so you do one side with the dowel and the sandpaper, you just, and you lightly hit all of those, and then hit it on the other side, or actually cut through some cardboard, and any kind of like fine burr that you start to develop, it'll help to kind of tune that up, and I don't know. Go ahead.
I was going to say that when I make the serrations, I'll have a little bit of burr, and then I'll just take I'll have a 3/8 dowel, and then I'll just kind of like scrape off. I'll just kind of like try to pop off that burr.
Yeah.
Just because, I mean, I'll go on the other side with Scotch-Brite. On the other side with Scotch-Brite to clean it up, and then I'll kind of just like give it a little pop. Because I do, after I put the serrations in, I put it where the serrations are down on the vise. Mm-hmm. The clamp or whatever my platform is, and then I'll give it a like just clean up just to kind of clean the back up, and then it'll allow that little guy to pop off.
Yeah, and sorry, go ahead.
I don't know. I said I ended it with I don't know.
I don't know. Yeah. I will add one note that even though the serrations on most knives are only maybe 1/4 inch to maybe 3/8 inch wide. The curvature of the wheel that's actually cutting that is probably closer to like 3/4 inch or 1 inch diameter. So when you test this out or try to do this, if you're going to use the dowel, then you might need to do a little bit of experimentation to figure out what size dowel actually fits the serration.
Right. That's because you need to figure out the sizing of your.
Yeah, because you could probably even do this honestly with like utility knives or like belt knives that have serrations. You just need smaller dowels, or honestly, you could even use a fucking drill bit, like the back part of the shank of the drill bit that doesn't have like the flutes. Mm. You just use that with a piece of sandpaper wrapped around it.
That's a good idea. You know where I'd get my drill bits if I were you?
Where?
Maritime Knife Supply. Go get
That's
them. You get, or you get your dowels, get your belts, get your abrasives, your anything you need. Go to Maritime Knife Supplies, your one-stop shop for knife makers, steel belts, abrasives, handle materials, tools, forger kilts, treating presses, all that stuff.
Candy too.
He sent me some mints. He'll send you some mints because he knows your breath stinks. He knows your breath stinks. He assumes
he's looking out for you.
You're by yourself. You got your mouth closed with, like, you know, cemented shut with your dry ass lips. And he's like, here, kid, live a little. So go to maritimeknifesupply.com and get all you need and get yourself a 10-pack of abrasive belts. And when you get that 10-pack of abrasive belts, get 10% off. So maritimeknifesupply.com, Lawrence is the man.
I fucking love it when people say, here, kid, live a little, for like the most basic shit
ever.
It's the best.
My father, when I was born, my father was 50. So he's 50 years old. It's like if I had a fucking newborn right now. Kind of like Craig. Kind of like Craig. So so he was like almost, like, he should have been my grandfather. You know, that his age. Because my sisters were in their 20s, or like 17 to 20. So like, he came from a different generation, and he used to say to me all the time, here, kid, live a little. All the time. He was that old school guy.
Yeah.
He was like, he'd give you something to live a little. Here, kid, live a little. I grew up, he said that shit to me all the time. You'd give me a nickel. I said, hey, Dad, can I have 25 cents for this candy machine? He'd give me a nickel. He's like, here, kid, live a little. I'm like, I didn't fucking want a 25 cents to give you a nickel, you asshole. So let's do a little listener feedback, guys.
Yeah, let's hear it.
If you want to give us some listener feedback or give us some suggestions, or sometimes people give us suggestions on bits and we take them, go to Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram. As our friend Welcome aboard Kitchen Knife Guy, a.k.a. Frankie, has done. He sent us a message. Hey, boys. Hope all's well. Listen to the latest episode of your podcast, and despite all the evidence you shared about a knife reviewer that sits in a gaming chair with plugs, I have no idea who that is. Perhaps that's a good thing, but I was wondering if you can share so I can check them out. So two episodes ago, I started to break the balls lovingly, I think. I don't know if it was lovingly. I'm saying it's lovingly now. I don't know if it was lovingly back then. Let's just say it was lovingly back then. About knife reviewers basically saying they don't know what the fuck they're talking about. And you very positively said, no, there's some of them know what they're doing, and they're, you know, they're talking to the consumer and stuff like that. And I made the point where I agree with the idea of them kind of giving a good idea of, you know, knife making knives for the consumer. But when they start to talk about the knife making process, they don't know what they're talking about. Sure. And I immediately turn them off. I then created the person that I thought, I wanted to kind of, this is theater of the mind, I was creating a person. Okay. So I don't know, there is no specific person with, you know, sitting in a gaming chair talking about knives and, like, you know, with, you know, plugs in their ears and all that stuff. I was creating what I thought, who I believed to be. So, Frankie, there was not a person. I'm not sending you to a person. There ain't no person. I created this person. I still believe, I'm not apologizing for what I said about knife reviewers, and I know you're a knife reviewer, and I appreciate what you do. I'm not apologizing for what I said because we know I'm right in this situation. And I'm saying this with peace and love and a little bit of, let's make a joke, you know what I'm saying? Knife reviewers, look, when they start to get, they puff their chests up and they don't know what they're talking about the knife making process, it gets me crazy.
Yeah.
Gets me crazy. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I agree. It makes me crazy too, because often what they're doing is they're spewing just a few buzzwords or talking points that the company who they bought the knife from uses in their brochures or their marketing, branding, whatever. They don't get very granular. They don't get detailed about it.
Well, so they don't know.
People are walking around saying this stuff and they don't know what the fuck they're actually saying. Or what it
like
means.
That ball bag face, Gordon Ramsay. He wants that ball.
I didn't know you had a problem with Gordon Ramsay.
I've said this before. Okay. He sometimes, and God bless him, he ain't listening to this. So I'm with you. You're not a ball bag. Hey, you know what? Just take it. You can have a sense of humor too. Okay. I'm with you. Gordon Ramsay, ball bag face. It's fine. I'm just kidding. But at the same time, he did some ad for some fakakta knife, and he was talking about the Rockwell, and he was saying why Rockwell is important to the knife for the consumer. And I was just like, don't talk about what you don't understand. I don't like it. It fucks us all up. Frankly, it fucks us up. It fucks knife makers up because all of a sudden you're creating the image that you're an expert on something you know nothing about.
Right.
Kind of like why all these assholes say, the only real knife makers are bladesmiths. It's like, go fuck yourself.
What?
No, you don't heard that. Oh, once in a while I get a message if I forge something and say, oh yeah, that's the only real knife making.
Jesus
Christ. And it's just like, that's not true either.
That's definitely not true.
Actually, I had a guy.
As a forger.
Yeah.
Who is somebody who forges quite a bit. It's definitely not true.
Now, Frankie, what I would suggest is, I think he's in Canada. There you have amazing bladesmiths all over Canada. Noah Vachon and all the rest of those guys. We have a ton of Canadian friends. Pickle cutter. You have a pile of Canadian knife makers.
Justin,
yeah. You have a ton of amazing knife makers, blacksmiths, stock removal guys. Canada is rich with amazing knife makers. I would suggest that you reach out to them and take a class because you will get a better understanding of knife making. And that will also be an arrow in your quiver in regards to how you talk about knives. You'll have a better understanding. And that's all I'm saying. And I'm with this guy, Kitchen Knife Guy. I'm with you, Frankie. You're my guy. I know. You know, we're fooling around and stuff like that. There was no person. But it reminded me when we were talking about the forging. I did a reel this past week where I was forging some integral knives. And I was doing some techniques that people hadn't seen before, and only because they hadn't seen before because they never did it. For a lot of bladesmiths, they don't, you know, they know what they know. Guy reaches, and I'm forging in the tang, and then I'm turning it around, and I'm really working on the heel, but I'm holding it from the tip of the knife. I have a different pair of tongs that holds the knife by the tip side, and then I can hold it comfortably.
Yeah.
And work on forging the heel, not at the very tip of the heel, but I'm forging it from the top, and then I'm just kind of slowly, slowly pushing it down and, you know, bringing the heel out. Guy reaches into my DMs. He says, "You're cheating because you're using too many tongs." Are you fucking kidding me? And he's just
you're cheating because you're not using your bare hands.
That's not the way they do it. They work forward. They work one direction. I didn't even respond. You're cheating because you're using too many tongs. Get the fuck out of here. This is a person who doesn't know what they're talking about. And what happens is there's so much misinformation based off of lack of experience that you hear some shit or you see some shit that you're not used to, and then you think that the way you know it is the only way. And the guy was just like, "I didn't think you could do it that way." And I was like, "Well, that's because you don't do it. You don't forge." I'm holding it backwards, but not really. You know, I'm not working at one. There's a million ways to skin a cat, but you got to learn all those ways.
Yeah, there's a lot of different ways to do it.
But you know how it is, and people say stupid shit all the time.
I don't know. I still think I know. I'm aware of a knife reviewer who's got giant plugs and sits in a gamer chair. I can't find his page. The guy I'm thinking of, but there's one out there.
And all right. Well, I was creating. Well, he wants to know who it is, but I don't know who it is, and my guy, an imaginary character. My guy was of Theater of the Mind. So we're with you, Frankie, not Kitchen Knife Guy. Do your thing, and I would suggest you would learn a lot more. I'm saying it in the sense of you'll get a better understanding when you do it yourself.
Yeah.
So I'm with Kitchen Knife Guy, Frankie. You're the man. I appreciate your support and appreciate your feedback. Woo! I squirmed out of that one pretty good, didn't I?
Yeah, it was good.
Not too bad. All right, next one comes from my man Ronald Handmade out in Australia. A bit on this week's podcast about the single beveled knives. You know, we were talking about single beveled knives last week. Somebody asked what they're all about. And he goes, a bit on this week's episode about the single beveled knives reminded me about an embarrassing customer interaction. I had a guy reach out, commissioned a Yanagiba-style carving knife with a single bevel. He asked for the bevel to be ground on the left. I gave him the usual, "Are you sure?" spiel that explained that the bevel on the left was for left-handed users and asked if he was if that's definitely what he wanted. He responded, "Have another look at my profile pic and you tell me." I looked. The guy only had one arm. His left arm.
Oh, my God.
I think he was sure. I think he was sure. Thankfully, he took it well. We laughed it off. I was mortified. Fuck, dude.
That is hilarious.
That is fucking crazy. Are you sure? Yeah, you fucking take a look. I got fucking one left arm. Yeah, I'm fucking sure.
I'm pretty sure.
No disrespect, Ronald, but what does this guy need a Yanagiba for? If I had one arm, I would try to do less. I would be like, everything's going in the blender. Everything's going in the blender. God. Everything's going in the food processor. I don't need to make sushi today. But God bless Ronald Handmade and God bless his customer. So he took it well and so should we. So next one comes from Mark LeBlanc. Do you have anything to add about single bevels after our last episode?
No.
Okay, good. Yeah. That was good. A good answer. I love a fucking Reco no. A Reco knows. That's fine. All right, Mark LeBlanc, our friend Mark LeBlanc, who's talking about Rockwell hardness. And he goes, "Rockwell hardness is not what makes a good knife, but it's only a measurable fact. I think that's why it gets so much publicity. And it does make a difference between a 40 Rockwell Walmart knife and a 58, 59, or 60-plus quality knife, handmade or not. Did you know that axes, even the best quality, are usually in the 57 to 60 Rockwell range? Some vintage axes are over 60, but that's extremely rare. And I think, and they take much more of a beating than a kitchen knife. That surprises me, be honest with you.
Yeah.
I would think that they'd be much softer.
Yeah, especially, I mean, I can see how an axe can be that high of a hardness, but when you're splitting wood, there's usually some, it's either on the ground or adjacent to rocks and dirt. It wouldn't make sense to have a high hardness, at least in my mind.
Yeah.
But
you want to shatter.
Right. And and the chances of blowing out a chip are a little bit with higher hardness, the chances of blowing out a chunk of it at you, even if it's a tiny little piece, could be devastating if that goes right into your fucking eye or something like right. that. You're going to shoot your eye out. So yeah, it wouldn't hurt for the axe to be just a little softer. I'm not saying like 40s, but you know, maybe mid 50s. You know, 50. It doesn't need to be super hard.
I like watching those guys forge in a hardenable bit into into a softer handle. And that makes a lot of sense because that makes a lot of sense because then all of a sudden you can, you know, cuz some people use axes incorrectly and then they'll use it like a striking tool. Not a striking tool, like they'll use a striking tool on the axe, and then that's when problems can happen.
Sure.
So there you go. Look at you. Axe talk. Sugar-free 92. This is that might be my favorite new listener name. Sugar-free 92. Sugar-free 92, baby. Coming in hot. This is one coming straight for you. From Sugar-free 92. Listener feedback, in regards to expansion of handle scales, remember you were talking last episode that you had that knife, we had to bust it apart because you had some antler.
Yeah.
Sugar-free 92 says, in regards to the expansion of handle scales, I'm in the UK and I've experienced swelling from a piece of bricked up stabilized ebony. Yeah, a piece of bricked up ebony. But I have no movement in that piece of. He had swelling in a piece of stabilized ebony, but he had no movement in a piece of walnut that was not stabilized. Any thoughts? And thanks for many, many laughs. Sugar-free 92. Just keep sending in whatever. I just want to keep saying your name. So keep sending in your questions, especially thanks for throwing in bricked up. I think from now on, stabilized is now officially bricked up. Or high Rockwell is bricked up too. So hey, listen, Abe. Well, this one. I'm going to call back to Kitchen Knife Guy Frankie. If you want to show real love when you talk about Rockwell, refer to it as bricked up. If a knife is very hard, you say it's hard, it's bricked up. And if it's very soft, it's not bricked up. So,
or you could even say, you know, it is 60 Rockwell, give or take a couple bricks.
Yeah. Oh man, I got this new knife to review. 63 Rockwell, bricked up. Say it like that.
Fuck, that's funny.
That's it. All right. So you have. I have thoughts on the stabilized versus non-stabilized in the walnut because I've had experience.
Yeah, I think you've got more experience than me. So why don't you go ahead and start?
I get Hudson Valley figured walnut, and I got a source that I love. I've been getting it since I started. And it's very figured, it's very dark, it's very dense, it's got a lot of character, it's got chatoyant, it's got the whole nine yards. And it's fucking dense. And when I stabilize it, I always stabilize it. Part of me doesn't even think I need to. It doesn't even take on that much. It takes on like a good amount, but not that much.
Okay.
I don't like regular walnut because it's so porous. And I made a knife a long time ago with non-stabilized figured walnut, and it has not changed just even a bit. And I have used stabilized walnut that wasn't figured, and it moved a little bit. You could feel it on the scales. Mm. So there are certain wood, and I am under the impression I've heard from people that like really tight figured maple doesn't move at all and doesn't need to be stabilized. But at the same time, you know, you get what you get.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think it's a hard and fast rule that it's always going to do that. So there might be something about that wood. For whatever reason, it's extra sappy or the grain's extra tight, and so it's not moving on you. But I think it would be a bad move to just assume that it's that kind of wood is always going to do that. So I would just be careful of that.
Yeah.
One case at a time.
I stabilize everything just to take out the doubt.
Sure.
And I've had really good experience. I've been making a ton of stabilized figured walnut, and I know that it doesn't move. But at the same time, I want to make sure that it doesn't move. Like, I don't want to have – I've had an instance, and we talked about this in the podcast. Mm-hmm. I sent this to you like a year or so ago. A customer of mine, I got some wood from the Australians laugh every time I say I got some wood. They say the timber. I got some non-bricked up wood. I got some flaccid wood from dyed ass wood from Blade Show. I put it on. They said it was stabilized and it was banana time. You know, it turned into banana time.
Oh,
and
right.
I liked the point. And then his wife started throwing the dishwasher, and then it was like boomerang time. And yeah. You could see right through the goddamn thing. It was unbelievable. I think I even sent you guys pictures of seeing in between.
Yeah.
So there is no hard and fast rule, but what you're trying to do is you're trying to kill the doubt. You're trying to kill the doubt. So I stabilize all of it just because I just don't want to hear about it later. It doesn't take a long time for wood to swell. Like, especially now it's getting springtime. I said in the last episode, I try to do all my stabilizing in the winter while it's dry. I know that the wood will stay a little bit drier. It's starting to kind of like warm up a little bit. And you can see where it moves. I have hybrid handle material that has definitely not been stabilized. Like, I can see it. I can see it's warped just as the scales.
Oh,
so, I mean, the move is when in doubt, you know, brick it up.
Brick it up.
You know, get it bricked up.
Yeah.
It's just what are you willing to put into maintenance?
Yeah, and I think that's what you were talking about, just like to reduce the doubt. I think is really a good point to make, because, you know, you could hope, or based off of one, piece of handle material, that you could make the assumption that everything else like that is going to be fine. But I would hate to go through the work of the handle sculpting and the glue up and the setup and all the prep work and all that shit for it to just go sideways. Now, that does happen from time to time, but that for me over the last 12 years on my own, 13 years on my own, it's happened twice. And this recent one is the second time this has happened. So I'm trying to alleviate that doubt as much as I can. And also trying to spare myself having to deal with it later,
right.
Like Jeff is saying. But at the same time, there's no guarantee.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's the thing. There's no way for somebody to kind of predict time. And for you, you have more on the line than I do. I mean, you know, your knives are so exquisite and they're so expensive and it's so much work in each individual one. That's one of the reasons why I like G10 so much, because then G10 ain't moving.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's kind of the cost of doing business. But when in doubt, brick it up.
Brick it up.
That's what I say. And then this one comes from Rancher Blades. He says, great last episode for a guy going full time. It took me 5 years to make the leap to make full time. But the biggest thing that helped me was taking a class from Jason Knight, Brent Bailey, and Ray Rybar. I then practiced blades on the anvil in Jason's style. I practiced 100 blades on the anvil in Jason's style, and it taught me so much.
Right.
So I am on board with Center for Metal Arts, and I know that they just have this blacksmithing for bladesmiths, so the power hammer class specifically for bladesmiths.
Yeah,
and they teach you power hammer techniques that are probably going to be really helpful. I am a huge fan of education, because it's like you talk about killing the doubt. If you go to a class where they've taught people how to do things, and I'm not going after the guys in the garage teaching you. I ain't going after you today. I ain't going after you today, this episode. But when you start to learn from places that strictly do teaching, and they invest their time and energy into the student learning at a very specific, in a specific way, with guardrails for success, guardrails against problems, you're going to do a better job. And this guy, Rancher, like, the amount of confidence you get and what happens when you take a class from a school is remarkable. It's remarkable. Mm-hmm. And it's going to excel your experience. And when it excels your experience, you're not going to fuck around with a lot of bullshit. And they're going to let you cut out all the nonsense. And then you're probably going to say, oh, maybe I don't like this. Maybe I just want to take classes. You know, sure. Maybe I don't want to start a business.
So. Yeah. Well, and I think people forget, like, they might look at some of the prices for classes and they're like, God, that's really expensive. But think about the amount of time and mistakes and experimentation. And there's value in some of that. But at the same time, you can kind of shortcut that and get to the point and then start getting reps in with good information, knowledge, and skill base to then continue to build from that point forward. And it seems like the time investment, the money investment, it feels like a lot. But if you're really serious about trying to take this far, either as a business or as a hobby, it's so worth it. It really is.
And one of the hardest parts is you think I don't need it, but you don't realize that they've figured out ways, you know, like Center for Mental Arts, perfect example. They figured out ways in which to make it very, very student oriented. And I have Pat Quinn on full blast once a month, and we answer blacksmithing questions. And his insight in regards to the education of blacksmithing and bladesmithing is not bladesmithing as much, but the forging and moving material is so great. And what he says is like, and we talk about the fact that, you know, I've been in classes where the teacher, this is new shit for them. Teaching is new for them. And what you end up with is they just want to kind of get through the class and you don't really end up making what they kind of said you were going to make.
Oh, okay.
You know, you want to bring people over the finish line and what you make looks like what it fucking looks like on the picture. You know what I mean? And I think that it's very important to guys like Jason, been doing it for a long time. Guys like going to the New England School of Metalwork, they've been doing it a long time. Center for Metal Arts, doing it a long time. You want to really kind of like invest instead of machinery. You really should really, really reconsider and invest in classes. I just sold out at a Center for Metal Arts for the spring class. I can't believe it. I got to talk to Pat, and he was very happy that we sold out for the first class. And then with that said, this summer I'm going to be in Barcelona. So all you people in Europe, come down to Florentine Kitchen Knives. Go to Florentine Kitchen Knives and check out the workshop. We have spaces available. And you'll be able to learn alongside me and Tomer Botner, and we'll have some fun. There'll be food. It's not high pressure. You can have zero experience. I taught a woman in sandals. I did make
you
her
were
step
in sandals
out of the
or she was in sandals?
She was in sandals.
Okay.
She was in shorts and sandals. I said, I don't think you're ready for this. And I walked her through it, and I actually did a lot, most of the grinding, because I was afraid that shooting at her, you know, shooting at her. And they told her, Tomer said, I told her. And she didn't listen. So she was wearing a nice dress. She was ready for a day in Barcelona. Didn't expect to be in a metal shop. And I took care of her, gave her white glove service.
You just need a pair of pair of giant clogs that somebody
can
borrow.
Dude, we have had people in shorts. We've had people in designer shoes. We have people in flip-flops. We've had people, and they don't. Some of them don't listen. But what you can do is come down to Florentine Kitchen Knives, and we'll give you a first-class operation. We do a meal. They cook a great meal. Ernesto, our man Ernesto, is a chef, and he's there. He makes an awesome dinner, and we will do that. So take a class with me and Tomer. All right, so we can do questions. We can do more feedback. You want to do another question and get the fuck out of here?
Sure.
Or talk about we got to talk about what we've been watching. I have a list of shows I've been watching.
Well, I actually
can't believe it.
I'm going to be teaching at Blade University in Atlanta this year.
What?
I got three classes I'm teaching.
Talk about them.
Talk about them. I got to find my notes about them real
quick. All right, hold what you got.
Yeah, so I'm teaching. Basically, I talked to Alicia. She's the show organizer. She's awesome. And she wanted to try to figure out a class for bladesmiths or for knife makers, because often the classes are during the show when people should be standing at their tables. And so she wanted to set something up on Thursday, which is setup day for makers, so they can actually get in and take a class without having to like be away from their table and potentially miss out on sales opportunities. Wow. And stuff like that. And so I got one that's tailored to makers that is about just like ways to conserve, especially when it comes to forging, conserving material in the shop, whether it's forging blades, forging Damascus, all kinds of stuff. It's a little bit of stuff that it touches on some light mathematics, but it's really helped me to save a lot of time and material in the shop. And then the other two classes, one's going to be a Damascus one, and then the other is going to be chef's knife class. They're a little bit more tailored towards collectors, but they are also beneficial for makers, especially makers who are maybe getting into Damascus or chef's knives, or even if they have experience in them. In regards to the Damascus, around the design, some of the design aspects, and then chef's knives especially, understanding some of the fundamental nuanced design features. A lot of people just think a chef's knife is a Bowie knife that you use in the kitchen, but that's not the fucking case. And so I'll talk
Thank
about.
God, you said it. Hey, Frank, you listening? That's some real knife reviewing right there. I'm just kidding, Frank. We were with you.
And so I'll talk about blade geometries, handle styles, blade to handle relationships, blade edge profile, all the shit to help really help. One, I think collectors to better understand custom chef's knives, because I think more and more chef's knives are selling at Blade Show, but I think the collector base still has a very rough understanding of what the hell they're actually looking at. And so it's about trying to help better inform the collectors so they can make better purchasing decisions, but also to help makers, to help maker to make better design choices, to make a tool, a thing that is a tool first, that is secondarily also attractive and nice to look at, you know. So those are going to be the classes I'm teaching at Blade University in Atlanta. So I don't know when they're going to start signing those people up for that stuff or opening those classes up. They're usually crazy affordable. It's like $25 or $30 or something like that for class. And so if anybody's interested, you can go find it on Blade magazine, or I think Blade Show's Instagram will be posting that stuff.
But you're talking about Blade Show East, not Blade Show West.
Yeah, Blade Show in Atlanta.
I hope to see you there.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Well, you know.
I look forward to it.
We'll see what happens. I have my friends at Tormac who are going to be down there for the first time. I kind of convinced them to come down. And
you're going to be their front man?
The effort. You know what? We'll see. I'll say hello. I say hello to these people.
Yeah.
But you know who is going to be there?
Who?
Damasteel.
Damasteel.
You kidding me? Damasteel.se for all your pattern welded stainless steels. Don't get much better than Damasteel, guys. This is the future of knife making.
We
talked about it.
Yes.
Pattern welded stainless steel is the future of knife making. You might as well get on board in this. And if you go to Damasteel.se and use the promo code KnifeTalk10, you get 10% off all of it. And you can go to check out all their stuff at Damasteel AB on Instagram, and you can join us for the next Damasteel Invitational, and we will, there will be, and you don't, and if you want to be in the Damasteel Invitational, send a message to Carly. Don't wait to be asked. Somebody's just like, oh, they never ask me. They're not doing that. Don't worry about that. Go send them a message saying, y'all want to be in this motherfucker. Yeah. You say to Carly, don't say that to Carly. Don't say anything like that to Carly. Be kind and generous. She's fantastic. And hopefully we'll see her at Blade Show this year.
Hell yeah. I hope so too. Well, and hopefully I don't spit take all over her this year.
Is that what you did?
Oh, I had that beer. I don't know what the hell happened. We were talking about some like super.
Oh, you snarfed?
Yeah. I don't know. It wasn't even anything like crazy funny. I just like, I don't know why my brain just glitched and I fucking almost completely spit taked on her. There's
don't
just a little bit of spray.
Yeah, just a little bit.
Sorry, Carly. Sorry, Carly.
Carly's the man. Carly's the best. Carly is the best. All right. Well, with that said, let's get the fuck out of here. You know what I'm saying? All right, guys. We will see you. Oh, so go. Number one is rest in peace to Steve. I want you to go to keep continuing to contributing to the GoFundMe that's in the profile in the bio at Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram. And go, you can go listen to the last episode that Craig had put the old episode that he interviewed Steve on. You can go to Full Blast Podcast and listen to the episode that I had put up. And I did a new, a little bit more in-depth remembering Steve Pellegrino. So rest in peace, Steve Pellegrino. And everybody, thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next week. I don't know how you do a fucking, you know, rest in peace and then like into... Steve would have been all right. You watching anything good?
Oh, let's see. I'm still working through Reacher. I haven't been watching a whole lot.
Is Reacher good?
I like it. Yeah.
He's like, seems like a real big knob of a man. It's a big dude. This is fucking
I love how the first place he goes is his knob.
Well, I don't really refer to, I mean, I know that most of our listeners refer to a knob as penis, but I just thought of him like a hunk, like a big giant fucking lump of a man.
Okay. Yeah, he is. But the show's good. It's kind of a detective series.
And he just kicks everybody's ass.
Yeah, it's a little different. I mean, it actually, you know, it's like Slow Horses?
Slow Horses.
Yeah. They're still kicking ass, but it's just, you know.
But they seem like regular people. They don't seem like these roided out monsters. He seems like this fucking perfectly tanned, just giant of a man.
Yeah. No, the good, I really enjoy it. I like the show. And yeah, so I'm still just kind of working through that. I'm trying to think if I've watched any movies interesting lately.
No, we are like addicted, and I'm only addicted to it because I got special treatment. Oh. We love The Pit. Have you heard of The Pit?
The Pit.
The Pit is it's so Noah Wiley, who back when we were younger, when I was younger, he was on ER, where he was this young doctor. It was one of the hottest shows back in the 90s, and he was a young doctor. Now he plays a different guy, this old, grizzled emergency room chief doctor.
Oh, he's a doctor.
And it's following along this emergency
room.
But it makes it so good because, especially, you almost see, I mean, they're not connected. The shows are not connected except for he plays. In the first one, in ER, he's this young guy, and now he's this older guy. He's fantastic, and each episode is an hour of one day. So the whole season is one day, and each episode is an hour. Now, it's crazy.
Okay.
And frankly, there was this whole thing about this guy on life support just when Steve was on, and I was just like, my wife's just like, you sure you can handle this? I'm like, I mean, it is fucking weird, but, you know, so... I'm very fortunate because my wife is a nurse practitioner and she has worked in an ER before. Mm-hmm. So we don't watch it on like a couch or on a TV. We have it on the computer on the kitchen table, and she's sitting on one side and I'm sitting on the other, and she stops it to kind of tell me what's happening. And she can explain what this means, what that means, and she's like, this is the best, most accurate depiction of medical stuff, and it's almost like they're speaking, not only the actors, but they're speaking a foreign language. Says everything they say, even just like they rapid through, you know, 10 mils of this and 10 mil, you know, cc's of that and all this stuff. She's like, everything they said is down to the wire and everything is good. And it's just like, but I'm lucky because I have like this cheat sheet next to me who's telling me, tell me what's happened.
You got this running commentary.
Oh, it's the best. It has made it so much more fun because she'll explain what's going on or the rules and regulations in terms of, like, you know, protocol and what you do. And it's been so much fun watching it with her. And I never would have watched this any other way. But I think it's a great show.
You guys should record a podcast where she's doing the running commentary so I can listen to it while I'm watching
it's
the movie.
It's not going to happen. She wants none of this. Time. She wants nothing. Because of her job, she wants to remain anonymous. She has no interest in it. But it is funny because, like, I mean, what does that mean? And she'll stop and then she'll go, you know, she'll give me a fucking, I mean, I feel like I went to medical school. Like, I honestly think that I could help somebody right now.
You're like, you're like the knife reviewer now. Oh, you're like, oh, yeah, I know everything about
I am now a knife reviewer. I know all of it, guys. If you get fucked up around me, I'm taking care of you. I'm jabbing a pen in your neck. I'm clearing an earway. You're good. You're with me. You're fucking clean. I'm like when Mario from Mario Brothers like dies and he comes back. I will keep you alive. I'm the special mushroom that'll keep you alive.
I can
do it all. Oh yeah, I broke your leg. I'll fix it. I know what to do now.
Let's go.
Yeah, but all of it is like it does get hairy, like girls, young girls drowning, and it does get a little bit tense.
Yeah, it sounds right.
But the funny thing is, another thing is my wife, when she first was in medical school, she was at Columbia Nursing School. She had to get CPR certified.
Okay.
So she said, "Dude, would you want to do it with me?" And I said, "Yeah, I'll keep you company." And this is back in, once again, the late 90s. So, you know, you can do CPR and first aid and all that stuff. You know, it's not like you don't have to, you know, you can get it anywhere. You can get Red Cross. So I went and I was just fucking making jokes the whole time, which was probably unfortunate. And I've definitely gone through that class 4 times. And my daughter, when she went to be a lifeguard, she had to take it. So I went with her. And I say that I could, if you fell down and I could take care of you, I've gone to the CPR 4 times. I don't remember anything. Not a fucking thing.
Well, and the rules have been changing over the years, too.
I don't know. They have not changed. If you have a heart attack in front of me, you're going to die.
Because
I
can't. God.
I say that I can put a fucking pen in your neck and find a breathe away. But now that I think about it, I don't remember a goddamn thing. I've gone to that goddamn CPR class 4 times. I don't remember a goddamn thing. Mm. Don't get hurt around me. I'm coming to a complete change. I don't know anything. Nothing. That's the best part. Hillary's like, "Oh, you should remember all this." I'm like, "I don't remember anything."
That's hilarious. Oh my God.
Does somebody know CPR? I've only taken the class 4 times. This has only been like 2 full days of my life, but I don't remember a thing of it. You're boned. Hillary, go ahead, fix that person. All right. I think we've said enough, don't you?
Yeah, I think we did it.
Mareko, it's always great hanging out with you. This has been a pleasure. This has been a pleasure for me for the past 7+ years, and I'm grateful to you, and I'm grateful to Craig, and I'm grateful to the listeners.
Thank you, guys.
Guys, we will see you next week. All the best.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, Geico helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with Geico.